Fisher Body Historical is interview with the community. Today is March 22nd, Wednesday, 2006. The time is approximately 1:25. We are at the Frank Dreyer, UAW Local 602, Frank Dreyer Greenhouse. First, we'll introduce the team.
John Fiedewa.
And my name is Marilyn Coulter. And today we're here with...
Richard Errol Hagman.
Okay, Mr. Hagman, can you please spell your name for us, please?
H-E-G-A-M-O-N.
And your last name?
Hagman.
And your Richard? Okay, I'm sorry. And today, can you also give us your address?
2148 Bruce Avenue, Lansing.
Okay. So, Mr. Hagman, are you married with children?
Yes, I'm married.
And where were you born and where were you raised?
I was born and raised here in Lansing, Michigan.
Okay. And your education?
I graduated from JW Sackman.
Okay. And your military? Were you in the military?
No, I wasn't in the military. No.
Okay. Now, you were, you worked for General Motors, but you also were born and raised right here in the Lansing community.
Correct.
What we want to know from you as being a community person, can you tell us whatever histories or memories you have about Fisher Body Lansing, General Motors, living in the community where the factory was? Can you give us some of your histories and share some of your memories with us?
Well, there's so much from... remembering the smell of new cars when you used to park them on the lockdown, you know, on Old Avenue. When the kids go through, being able to go in and out of them days, some in the medical department, different things as kids. It was more open at that time. You could park the plant.
Now, was that for both facilities? You said you could go into the medical facilities?
Yeah, we used to over the main plant, you know.
At the main plant.
Yeah, main plant. Sometimes we go in there. If you want to talk about the
primarily with Fisher.
Fisher Body. Most people always remember the beauty of the grounds out in front, but and that how the building was kept on the outside. But if you want me to give the other side of it as a community, as a black person, young black kid in the neighborhood, I think the story you might want is the fact that at that time, one of the summertime, you know, we're talking about in the late 30s, before the war, one of the entertainment in the community was go watch softball games at the West Side Park, which was on Saginaw Street. And so the people from the West Side would walk from the Williams and St. Joe areas, Old Avenue areas, to Saginaw Street to watch the game. And that meant coming up Jennison Street. The last paved streets would be on the end of West Street before you got anything west of there was nothing paved west of Jennison, and where JW Section is now, going south was all woods. Mm-hmm. It was all woods, and so we would cut through as a shortcut. And Fisher by that time was all along Berlin. And so we come along there at night, and the guys who worked there would start looking out the window. They see what's coming, and they would start catcalling. Mm-hmm. And sometimes there could be maybe 20, 30, 35 people, you know, kids and sometimes men and women too come along, go walk into the game. Mm-hmm. So they would look out the window and they start calling. Mm-hmm. You know, jungle bunnies, coons, rastas, mm-hmm. niggers, mm-hmm. where they started calling. So, every time some people hollering names back. You know. Mm-hmm. And so this went on. So we got sick of it. Pull up. Mm-hmm. So we would start stopping in the fields over there where the school started picking up rocks. Mm-hmm. So they started calling. We started breaking windows off, going all over London. Mm-hmm. And we see at that one, we hear a name, we break a window. Mm-hmm. And then we broke a lot of windows. We're not done. So the rock throwing and breaking windows apparently didn't stop us. So we go along, and you know, the plantation guys, they would come on out and chase us, you know, and they never caught us. But, so we found that change of strategy. Mm-hmm. You guys would get rocks, and the rest of us would get the big lumps of hard clay. Uh-huh. And we found that one guy throw a rock, they would see the rock coming, they would duck. Uh-huh. You know. And then next two guys would throw clay. Uh-huh. And when they had the screens up on the windows. Uh-huh. So when the clay would hit the windows, uh-huh, it would go through a splatter.
Oh. Yeah.
Well, you know, and there we take off, you know. Back in, it must have been like in the 70s. And I got involved in a union like that. And in fact, after one of the CAP council. And I tried to think, I can't rack my brain. It wasn't, I'm trying to think some of the guys I knew from Fisher Body. And I can remember some of the guys were involved in your leadership at that time. Divine, and I'm trying to think some of the guys. And the fellow I'm thinking about, I can picture him, but I cannot remember his name, but he had been on your shop committee, and he had been really been involved. And mm-hmm. So we got talking, you know, about some of the problems in the plant. And I brought this story up, and he got smiling. So he gave me his side. Every time we throw that clay in there, stones in there, mm-hmm, those guys were egging us. I'm going to give you a side of it. Because we were doing something the union guys couldn't do. We were stopping the line. Mm-hmm. Every time that we go in there, we would, that dirt would mess up the enamel of the car. They'd have to yank them off, so that would stop the line. And all those years, you know, I could see the racism side. Mm-hmm. I couldn't see.
You were giving them a break.
We were giving those guys, that's the only break those guys. That time, they didn't get breaks. Mm-hmm. So that every time we did that we were getting those guys on the line of break.
So you thought they were being malicious, and they just knew that you were a way to help them.
There was no question some of them were being malicious, sure. But there was another side of it.
There was an additional saying. Yeah. It's wrong, but it's going to give us a break.
Yeah.
Did you ever have any confrontations with the security, or they just come out and chase you away?
Well,
and
they would try to catch us. Like we had to be honest about it. And right, I'm talking about kids come off from the depression. Mm-hmm. And we know coming home, we very seldom, we know they would call police on time, and we know they'd be looking for us. So mm-hmm. We had on the way back home, we'd go down Saginaw and one of the bakeries, I can't remember now if it was one of the big bakeries had a bakery there in Saginaw. Mm-hmm. And usually late at night they would have all their little pastries, you know, like the mm-hmm. you know, the cupcake things that sell in the store, you know, the pad pie and all that. They had that sitting out there on the trucks all loaded up, you know. Mm-hmm. We would, you know, I'm lighting a load on the way home.
So, Mr. Hegman, how far did you live from Fisher Body in proximity, or did you just live in the West Side community?
I live on Main, between Butler and
okay. Reagan. So actually, you live closer to the Oldsmobile facility.
Yeah.
Okay. But now,
there wasn't any blacks live in this area at all. Exactly, wasn't that, you know. There wasn't very many houses out in this area.
Back in this time. And so, and the time frame we're talking about then is like 1935, 37, you said?
Yeah, I'm going to say between 30, well, let's see, I would think between, I'm going to say between 35 and 40. You
know? Between 1935 and 40?
The 41, I would say the late 30s, you know. Yeah, 35 to 40, yeah.
So I know that there were other parts of General Motors, like you said, you can remember the post-depression years, things like that. Now you said also something about you can remember back during when there was a strike here and the guns
When I remember when UAW was trying to get into General Motors, and they had the Michigan National Guard, 119 field artillery, had a machine gun that they set up down there on division and Knowles.
Really?
I guess to keep keep order down there. Keep the strikers out or what, yeah.
Now, you were...
That would have been in 36, 37, somewhere.
36, 37. Now, you went to J.W. Sexton, you said. Mm-hmm. And this was in what year? What years were you at Sexton?
I graduated in January. I was started in, 43, 44 to 47. Yeah, okay. I started in January, the end of January.
43 to 47. Now, there were certain things about... What did you know about Fisher Body, Lansing, coming up?
Well, I knew there was only there wasn't any black work there, and I knew it was all I could see was a bunch of white guys who would come to win and call you some bad name. Even if it'd be that time, it was during high school. I've been in high school really during the war, so I was something during the war. Mm-hmm. And one other thing I would have with Fisher Body that at that time when they first built Sexton, because of shortage, like all the north end of the building, we didn't have any heat.
Oh.
Right. And the track team, we didn't have any kind of track. In fact, we used to have to go over and try to practice track on Fisher Body's parking lot on the gravel over there. So standing there for doing anything, trying to run track to get someplace. We had to run on the gravel on the.
So Sexton High School used to practice the track and field in the Fisher Body's parking lot?
Yeah, that's where we practiced.
Around the cars and things?
Well, that, yeah.
Just a
on the corner, there wasn't that many cars. Yeah, that's where we practiced, mate. Yeah.
Oh.
That's where we run outdoors. That's where we practiced on the track out there on the parking lot.
Oh.
But we didn't have the track around the school.
Excuse me.
Excuse me.
I forgot to turn off my phone. Sorry, I have a massive snafu. So, as a teenager, you practiced the track and field out on the
Fisher Body parking lot.
Yeah. Uh-huh. Did you know many? How did the community view Fisher Body?
Well, I think they viewed Fisher Body like we did at all the other places, and just hoping get in there and get a job.
Mm-hmm.
Hope to get in and get a job. Mm-hmm. I think one of my neighbors, Mr. Parker, is one of the first ones to come in and get a job in there.
Mm-hmm.
And slowly, as the war effort started, and then things started to open up. I can tie in with the picture, but it give you an idea of some of the climate. When I first came into the fourth plant,
mm-hmm.
there was a lot of really hard feeling.
Mm-hmm.
excuse me. Because that was right after they negotiated the contract in 46, like that. But during the war, there had been a group that they tried to keep Bill Dean, a black guy by the name Bill Dean, mm-hmm. from being a hammerman, running hammer.
Mm-hmm.
A lot of the guys that had the best jobs, at that time, hammerman was highest rated, one of the highest paid jobs in the plant. I think they got a nickel more than machine repairman.
Mm-hmm.
That time, 40s, so we kind of pay we're talking about. And a lot of the guys that were hammermen in there, were white guys that came from out of Flint and out of Bay City and some of the places, you know, and a lot of them were Southern guys, you know. And so when Bill tried to get to run a hammer, those guys threatened to strike. If any black guy got a chance to get on certain jobs. Since it was making war material, Army told him, when you strike, you go in the Army. So that broke the strike. And that's how Bill Dean got to be the first black guy in Lansing to run a hammer. And I ended up being the last one.
So he was the first and you were the last. Now, because you did not actually work in Fisher Body, you worked at the...
I've been in and out of Fisher Body as like the benefit rep, and you know, I've been in and out of Fisher Body.
So you worked at the Forge plant, and you became a benefits rep and an active member of UAW Local 1680. But now, what was it that kept you out of Fisher Body? What were some things that you might have heard or whatever that kept you from going into Fisher
like
Body?
When General Motors called me within 3 years, I had a choice of going to Fisher Body plant, Forge plant, or the main plant. They all called me within 2 or 3 days. And the guys, the few blacks I knew in Fisher Body, Clifford Green and Fred Taylor and some of those guys, those guys that came out of the service and went into Fisher Body, and they all were given some of the work, wet sanding jobs. And that was a hard, you know, hard, dirty, you know, bad job, wet sanding. And so everything I heard about the job, that, and some of the jobs over on the line, I didn't think it was something I wanted to do. I knew what I heard about the line. With the thought to, like I said, not staying in General Motors on, I figured, well, I'd go in where the forging was, where the money was, and, you know, because I didn't plan on staying, just getting money together to go to college.
And go to college.
So I ended up there 47 years. So
now with the Lansing then, three different plants called you at three different times, so jobs were very prevalent right back then. Lansing, back at that time when you hired in, it sounds as though there were jobs every place because you just said three different plants called you to work. So was that, there was an abundance of work in Lansing back then, unlike today?
Yeah, I think that that time, they were hiring, and I think I might have been right on the first of that. Because I hired a bunch of people in 48 and 49. And so I would think I was just lucky enough to be on the purse, started bringing people in.
Now, you had a lot of connections with General Motors and Oldsmobile. I know you, could you briefly share the story again about how your parents actually got to Michigan?
We got to Lansing?
Yeah.
Well, they got to Lansing because of my dad being hired on REO's building a hotel. My dad was brought here to be the head maitre d', head waiter, you know, and he hired he'd had connections. He'd worked as a foreman on the dining cars.
So he was a Pullman porter?
Well, he worked as a dining car waiter all through the Midwest and in Chicago. And at that time, those guys kind of, a lot of them worked circuits. And they would work like from Arkansas and Atlantic City. And so a lot of those guys knew each other. So my dad knew a lot of the clothes he worked with. And so when he come to Lansing, he was able to contact some of them, say, hey, I got a job up here. I'm starting a new hotel. And so that's how he was able to call guys from all over different parts and, you know, get a staff of people here for Olds to start a hotel. He wanted the hotel Olds to be one of the best hotels this side, you know, in this part of the country, compared to the Buck Cadillac and apparently Grand Rapids like that. So that's what he wanted best. So.
And you said you personally also knew some of the Olds family yourself.
Oh yeah. Because Mrs. Rose, she stayed right there and lived right there in the hotel. So. Uh-huh. And so I knew it real well. Yeah. Mm-hmm. And I remember Ariel's, you know.
So, I come back to the plant and the community here. You working here, living here, and you said something that some people only knew about the grounds. What was it about the grounds, and was General Motors considered a good neighbor, or it was just a show place for a factory?
Well, I was seeing how nice they kept outside grounds, you know. Mm-hmm. They have a big, beautiful Fisher by the coach out there, you know, in front. Mm-hmm. You know, and they always, you know, the grounds were just kept just beautiful, you know, so mm-hmm. it was something people like to be just go along and see, you know, like uh-huh. that, so all that, you know, that was a positive thing as far as the way they, the grounds was always, you know, it was always a beautiful, you know, the beautification of it, you know, of mm-hmm. Lansing.
And I know you talked earlier a little bit, too, you were talking about some of the different hiring practices that you thought people had to deal with back then, insofar as grandfathering in and things like that. Do you want to talk about that a little bit?
The best way to get a job was to know somebody, have some brothers there, and to join, belong to the right fraternal organization, and if you played ball on certain ball teams, would help you get into especially in main plant. Like I said, belong to the right church. Mm-hmm. Things like that. Yeah, all that stuff, you know, involved with getting hiring in.
So now, when you say if they played ball, do you mean like if they were like an old football star, or league?
Some of that, yeah.
Was it a city?
In fact, one of the head guys that used to hire in, did the hiring, he had played ball, and at that time, GM had their own baseball team like that. So naturally, they tried to hire some of the best ball players.
Oh, so now was General Motors participating in city leagues or something like that?
Yeah.
And so they had to get their good ball players.
Yeah.
That's right. And Fisher Body did that also. Yes.
I'm not sure if they all played. It just seemed like they all played on General Motors team. I'm not sure. Mm-hmm. I don't remember Fisher Body having their own team.
But it was just a General Motors site team.
General Motors team. I know. Yeah. Uh-huh. Yeah.
I know I've heard in some of the other interviews where people said that they played ball out here, like during breaks and stuff, and where they practice and do stuff like that.
Yeah, we used to have a ball diamonds over there by a plant, you know, where our parkland is, or playing in the porch, our porch plant, yeah. Mm-hmm. Yeah, ball diamonds like that. Mm-hmm.
Well, so now, are there some other things about living in a General Motors town and you like to share with us?
Oh, I so much.
You can just pick any particular thing, any particular memory that you remember. I mean, what impact did plant have on the city?
Well, I think Lansing. It has benefited from General Motors. I think General Motors definitely benefited from Lansing. Mm-hmm. And I think General Motors made a mistake when they pulled some of the work out of Lansing back in the 70s, mm-hmm. instead of increasing it. Mm-hmm. And because when they went to the downside in the car, the side of the car, when we had some of the best rearing cars in the world, mm-hmm. some of the best quality cars mm-hmm. in the world, and I think that work should have been, General Motors made a serious, serious marketing mistake when they did that.
Right now, you've worked for General Motors, you've been a member of 1618. What are your thoughts on having grown up here now and having the plant close? How do you feel about that now? Well, your plant's closing. Our plant is closing. As we speak right now, they're tearing it down.
Let me put it this way. If you look at the thoughts that at night in when I first got involved, really, well, I'll put it this way. I remember back in the 70s, at one time, your plant would have had, if I remember right, I would think around, you guys were probably up around 9,000 people, if I remember right, or better. Because we were up pretty close to 3,000 in our plant. Main plant had probably about, he had, if I remember right, somewhere around 18 to 25,000 in the main plant. If you take a local like Chevy Fire 659 over Clint, those guys had over, I think that one local, if I remember right, had, I is that not maybe the local, but I think they had around 100, better than 100,000 guys, people working. If you take all those jobs, we're talking about all the Clint, Lansing, Saginaw, right here in Cadillac, in Detroit now, we're talking about, I would think, and not having some, just doing a rough math, but I would think it would come close to maybe 200 plus thousand jobs that were eliminated. Now, the production, General Motors still makes cars, but jobs were eliminated. You know, so income, family income was eliminated. Now, and buying power was eliminated. Now, I think that somewhere down the line, this outsourcing of, we're not only outsourcing jobs, we're outsourcing lifestyle. And I think this country, not only General Motors, businesses in this country, I think we're asking for some serious, serious, serious problems. Because you can't put people, thousands and thousands of people, can't keep putting young people in jail and prison because they can't find a job. You can't tell people, oh, we can't give, people aren't going to go hungry.
They got to do something.
And so when you, I remember seeing the guys riding rails, railroads, hobos riding rails, you know, when I was a kid coming in. I had relatives that come in hobo, you know. I don't think we're going to go back to hobo.
No, I don't think.
I think people get on the streets. So, you know, I think somebody, leadership, business, and government, better start to do some serious, serious thinking, getting this country back going.
Now, I don't remember, the exact date, but were you a youngster back when they had the Lansing Labor Holiday, when they shut the downtown and the labor union?
That would have been in the 30s.
Do you remember that at all?
Not, I can't say that. I remember hearing about it, but I don't remember anything, you know, definite about it.
You were young then.
Yeah, too many other stuff.
Yeah, you. But okay. So, is there anything else you'd like to share with us?
Not that I probably think of me and things, but now that's, you know, everything.
But well, that's it. But now, can you? You said like initially you can remember when they were building Sexton and the greenhouse that we're in now. You remember then when it was all wooded area?
Yeah.
You remember that? Were there anything else about the community that you remember as a child? Or as a person working?
Pertaining to the Fisher Body?
Or the west side of Lansing where the plants were?
Well, like I say, all this year out here by the Fisher Body, that time was considered almost like out in the country. You think about it, and anything west of say Western Jennison was going on in the country. You know, I think the, the thoughts of anything like where Myers are like that, that was just a girl. Nothing, you know, Western, you know, that was great. In fact, we used to, go over out and hunt and stuff like that. You know, we went to Waverly Road like that. So in them days, all, that was all woods. You know, and the other thing is, you know, just expanded so much. You know, as kids, being in that time, we didn't have the cars, didn't have the TV like that, so we did a lot of walking. Like, it wasn't nothing for us to walk from the west side to where Sears is now in Fernando to see a circus, you know.
That's a long way. That's a very long way.
Friday nights, all the kids in Lansing during the 30s, REO's clubhouse used to have free movies.
Really?
And so all the kids in Lansing would walk over there, and you could go over there and... I think popcorn, I think, was a penny, or a bad sucker, I think, was a penny. And, you know, it's depression time. You know, kids go there, and that's where we go see a movie. And then summertime, I can't remember now if the city or, but the Scott's Park was down by those, and they would have movies for families could go out there and sit on only on the grass and watch movies, you know, on the grass in the summertime. That's some of the things I remember.
So you worked for General Motors and you were active. Now, how many years did you have of service with General Motors?
How much?
How many years of service did you have with General Motors?
I had almost 46 and a half.
46 and a half years. Oh, my God. And now, I know that you were a UAW GM benefits rep. And how long were you a benefits rep?
Well, I was one of the first ones they put on. So I was about 30. I think I went on and... I think I went on in 69 or 70.
69 or 70? What? Well, well, now...
93.
So, what was it like for being an African-American male and being active in the union early on?
We had to fight.
You had to fight for the position.
Because there was a lot of... there was a lot of racism within the UAW too, and I think that one thing that I had to, one of the best I remember as far as UAW meeting Walter Ruth and getting a chance to talk with him.
You had a chance. Oh, yeah. Can you tell us a little bit about the opportunity to meet Walter Ruth?
I think I met all Woodcock and about every, you know, that Portland met about every UAW. I was fortunate enough to go to 4 or 5 national conferences. I got a chance to meet people and went all over the country. Got a chance to meet people, political people, been in the White House.
Really?
To UAW? We were in the White House the day that the C. Carter, and we never got finished with the day that they were decided not to participating in the Olympics, so we our tour was cut short, so we didn't get a chance to, you know, see the whole White House. But so I got a chance to meet a lot of people and go a lot of places, and I'm very thankful you were very supportive, and I always will be.
So now you initially hired in GM in what year?
And what I'm saying that, Marilyn, I'm saying right now, they're going record right now, saying that these guys, retirees that are talking about going through the suit for their benefits are crazy. Because as a benefit rep, I know what the Supreme Court ruling was way back in the 60s. Mm-hmm. And those guys are jeopardized not only my benefits as a retiree, They're jeopardizing people in the plan too. Mm-hmm. They need to keep their mouth shut and let UAW leadership and General Motors work it out and keep the courts out of it.
Now, what year did you hire in again to at the plant?
Hmm?
What year did you get involved in General Motors again?
I got involved in the union.
No, what year with General Motors?
In 47.
Yeah. So you came in a year after they had initiated the Fair Practice Unit with the UAW Civil Rights, the Fair Practice Department in the UAW.
I can't remember what year they started.
1946.
But it wasn't. It didn't mean a whole lot.
Didn't mean a whole lot.
In fact, I say that mm-hmm. because.
That's the other part. So the more of my team, I.
In fact, I'm one of the first representatives from my local to go to a fair practice conference like that. And I can't remember the black guy's name that was headed. Man, they didn't have much. He didn't have much. That mm-hmm. that would have been in the '50s, if I remember right, or early sixties. Really? I mean, he didn't have much mm-hmm. talk at all. Mm-hmm.
We have other team members here now. We have
Jerry Smith,
Cheryl McCoy. I got to throw out for you guys. I have to, so I can come back sometime.
Mr. Heckman, I want to say thank you so much for starting the memories. We're going to put this on pause, and we're going to come back to you again.
Okay. I can answer questions better than the past.
Okay. All right. Yeah. Thank you. Yeah. And we will. And I've